Waikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Waikatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening a book that, well, it didn't just summarize military events, it fundamentally changed how historians, and hopefully you view the past, were diving into The Face of Battle by John Keegan.
Oh, this is such a powerful and, I'd say, necessary book. For centuries, military history was written almost entirely from, you know, the top down.
Right, the perspective of the high command. Maps, troop movements, political outcomes, it all felt very neat, very clean.
And totally disconnected from the reality on the ground, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. Then Keegan steps in and basically says, hold on, you've missed the entire point. He just cuts through all that abstraction and asks the central, really provocative question. What is it actually like to be an individual human being caught in the terrifying, chaotic vortex of combat across different eras?
Mm-hmm. So our mission today is really to try and grasp that visceral, that psychological reality. By looking at three key battles, Keegan forces us to measure the human cost in, well, suffering and terror, not just strategic gains or losses.
We're stripping away the romance, the drum and trumpet, as he calls it, to see the anatomy of combat itself.
And to understand this work, you really need to know a bit about the author John Keegan. He lived from 1934 to 2012 and became, I mean, truly one of the 20th century's most influential military historians.
He spent decades as a senior lecturer at the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst.
Now, Sandhurst, for anyone unfamiliar, is where Britain trains its elite army officers. So Keegan was teaching the very highest levels of military leadership.
But here's the really interesting part, the paradox, isn't it? Keegan never actually served in combat himself. He had health issues from early life that prevented it.
Yeah, teaching the sharp end of war without ever having been there personally.
And you might think, well, surely that's a weakness. How can you write about battle without experiencing it?
But Keegan, and I think this is crucial, leveraged it as a strength. His civilian status gave him this radical objectivity. It allowed him to ask the questions that maybe military insiders, people steeped in that culture, might just take for granted.
He wasn't bound by institutional loyalty, perhaps?
Exactly. He approached combat not as a participant, but as a compassionate analyst. He was seeking a kind of universal understanding of the human ordeal under extreme, terrifying stress. He had the distance needed to see the whole picture. The fear, the confusion, the sheer physical misery.
Okay, so let's unpack his core thesis then. You mentioned he rejects the drum and trumpet approach to history. What does that actually mean in practice?
Well, the drum and trumpet approach is history that focuses only on the grand narrative. Mm. You know, the dates, the generals' names, the big strategic moves, the outcomes. It's the sort of history that feels heroic, maybe.
Sanitized, even.
Yeah.
Sanitized, yes. Keegan dismisses this because it misses the sensory reality. His focus is entirely on the physical, the psychological, and the sensory experience of the individual combatant. He basically throws away the maps.
And the book's structure is just brilliant in its simplicity, isn't it? He doesn't just talk theory. He walks us chronologically through three absolutely pivotal battles across 500 years.
All right. We get Agincourt in 1415, then Waterloo in 1815, and finally the Somme in 1916.
And that structure isn't just random.
No, not at all. It allows him to trace this, well, frankly, terrifying trajectory. How technology fundamentally changed the means of killing, while at the same time highlighting the enduring constants of human fear, exhaustion, and confusion.
We're moving from, what, intimate terror to disciplined terror, and then finally to this kind of anonymous despair.
Precisely. It's an anatomy of combat, dissecting it layer by layer across time.
Okay, let's dive into the first one. Agincourt, 1415. This is the ultimate example of what Keegan calls intimate violence, the personal, chaotic melee. Survival depends on muscle, steel, and sheer proximity. Yeah, imagine being a French knight there, encased in what, maybe not hundreds, but certainly dozens of pounds of plate armor. Keegan describes the experience as just overwhelming.
It's not just the fear of being hit.
No, it's the exhaustion, the claustrophobia inside the helmet, the heat, and the cruel reality that if you fell in that thick mud, often you just couldn't get back up.
Mm.
You became immobile, helpless.
Vulnerable to the English archer's daggers and the sounds. They must have been horrifyingly close, the shouts, the metal on metal.
Absolutely. And this intimate setting, this face-to-face brutality, it also dictates the morality, or perhaps the lack of it. Keegan confronts that infamous moment when the English killed thousands of French prisoners.
Which is often framed as just savage cruelty, pure and simple.
But Keegan analyzes it differently. He sees it as a cold, practical battlefield necessity. The English simply couldn't safely guard thousands of captives while potentially facing another wave of attack. It wasn't pretty, but it highlights this brutal efficiency overpowering any kind of chivalric ideal. Glory went out the window. Okay, fast forward 4 centuries. We jump to Waterloo in 1815. This is what Keegan calls transitional warfare, the gunpowder era. And the shift is radical,
totally radical.
Death now increasingly comes from invisible enemies, often at a distance, thanks to artillery bombardment. The sheer chaos of the Agincourt melee is replaced by something else. A formal, tactical rigidity that demanded almost superhuman discipline.
It's a completely different kind of courage required, isn't it? Keegan details the sheer psychological stress of standing shoulder to shoulder in those British infantry squares.
Right. You're essentially stationary. You're watching cannonballs just tear massive holes through the ranks next to you. You're hearing the thunder of French cavalry charging toward you, and the whole battlefield is choked with thick, acrid musket smoke.
And your job isn't to charge or duck or run. It's just to stand firm.
It depended entirely on rigorous, repetitive training to override every natural survival instinct telling you to get out of there. The combat was formalized, almost ritualized in a way.
And shrouded in smoke and noise, marking that really profound step toward mechanical warfare, where often you couldn't even see the person who killed you.
The distance, both physical and psychological, had grown substantially. You weren't looking your killer in the eye anymore.
And that distance, that abstraction of killing, reaches its awful climax another century later at the Somme in 1916. This is industrial anonymous slaughter.
Yeah, here technology just dominates everything. Individual courage, which still mattered at Waterloo, becomes almost utterly irrelevant in the face of machine guns and industrial-scale artillery.
The psychological landscape here is defined by noise, just overwhelming, deafening noise.
Keegan describes the Somme as the ultimate expression of industrialized warfare. The sheer volume of artillery fire often made command and control completely impossible. And the machine guns, weapons of mass production, really, just scythed down waves upon waves of advancing soldiers.
Death was distant, random, delivered by unseen weapons from hundreds, even thousands of yards away.
The result was this immense psychological stress, what they started calling shell shock. This battle, perhaps more than any other, demonstrated the catastrophic failure of commanders applying outdated 19th century tactics, like walking slowly in lines to 20th century weapons.
It was mass impersonal death, the terrible completion of that trend towards abstraction and killing that started centuries before.
And that trajectory is the great insight, isn't it? Keegan's conclusion connects these three distinct epochs. Warfare moved, almost inexorably it seems, from personal, visible killing at Agincourt through the disciplined squares of Waterloo to this remote, mechanized slaughter at the Somme.
And he didn't stop there, did he? He offered a rather prophetic speculation about the future.
He did. He wondered whether future warfare might eventually evolve beyond direct human participation entirely. Battlefields potentially becoming, in his words, empty of men, controlled remotely by technicians far away. Chilling, really.
Which leads us directly into the key themes of the book. If we connect this historical journey to the bigger picture, that first overwhelming theme has to be the dehumanization of warfare.
Absolutely. And the key mechanism, as we've touched on, is distance. Keegan shows how technology, think longbow, then musket, then machine gun, then massive artillery, systematically increased the distance, both physically and emotionally, between the killer and the killed.
And that context is just crucial for understanding modern conflicts, isn't it? When you think about drones or cyber warfare, the consequence of action can be reduced to pixels on a screen.
Exactly. The cost becomes abstracted, easier to ignore, perhaps.
Yeah.
Keegan gives us the historical roots of that phenomenon.
Okay, theme number 2. Keegan systematically destroys the myth of military glory. He takes those romantic, sweeping narratives of heroism and replaces them with the messy, exhausting reality of confusion, fear, and sheer physical endurance.
Yeah, victory rarely came from some glorious, spontaneous charge against the odds. More often, it came from disciplined refusal to panic, like those soldiers standing steady in the square at Waterloo, or just grim tactical efficiency, like the prisoner killing at Agincourt.
It really compels us as listeners to be far more critical of how current conflicts are packaged and presented in our media and culture, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And despite all these technological shifts, the third key theme, and maybe the most universal one, is the primacy of human factors. Regardless of the weapons, regardless of the era, outcomes are often determined not by grand strategy on a map, but by basic human elements: fear, exhaustion, confusion.
And crucially, something Keegan termed primary group cohesion.
Yeah.
That's a term worth digging into a bit. What exactly is primary group cohesion?
It's essentially the loyalty soldiers feel towards their immediate comrades, the handful of people standing right next to them, sharing the same trench, the same square, the same immediate danger.
So not necessarily fighting for abstract ideals.
Well, Keegan argues that often soldiers fight less for abstract concepts like king and country or grand mission statements, and much more for the trust and survival of the small group of people they are literally sharing hell with. They don't want to let their buddies down.
That really reveals something fundamental about teamwork under pressure, doesn't it? Success in any high-stress environment, military or civilian, depends fundamentally on trust in the people right beside you.
Precisely. Less on abstract mission statements, more on that immediate person-to-person bond.
You know, Keegan's analysis yielded some incredibly deep, really memorable insights, lines that just stick with you.
Oh, absolutely. I think the foundational statement, the one that really defines his entire approach, is the face of battle is not the face of history.
Explain that a bit more.
Well, history traditionally deals with outcomes, causes, consequences, the big picture. Battle itself deals with chaos, noise, fear, pain, survival, the visceral moment-to-moment reality. They're fundamentally different perspectives on the same event.
And he was utterly committed to whose story truly mattered, wasn't he? Arguing, the soldier's story is the real story.
Yes. He realized he had to elevate those eyewitness accounts, the diaries, the personal letters, above the often sanitized official reports to understand what actually happened on the ground in the minds of the participants.
And focusing on that internal struggle, that psychological dimension, he states, battle is essentially a moral conflict. What did he mean by moral there?
He meant it primarily in the psychological sense. The ultimate success or failure often depends less on technical advantages or numbers and more on whether a fighting force can maintain its cohesion, its morale, its fighting spirit under catastrophic stress.
Yeah.
Can it withstand the moral meaning, psychological disintegration that battle induces?
And finally, perhaps the most devastating insight into the lasting human cost. There is no such thing as getting used to combat.
Yeah, that challenges the whole idea of the hardened, immune veteran. Keegan argues that repeated exposure doesn't lead to immunity. Instead, it creates cumulative psychological damage. It permanently alters the individual. There's always a cost.
These ideas, they feel so specific to warfare, but they really do transfer surprisingly well to our civilian lives, don't they?
They absolutely do. Take leadership in crisis. Keegan's analysis of Wellington at Waterloo is fascinating. His famous calm under intense fire wasn't necessarily an inherent lack of fear.
It was a performance.
It was a calculated performance, exactly. It was designed to visibly maintain morale among his troops. If the commander looks calm, maybe things aren't so bad.
So the application for us, if you're leading in any crisis, whether you're an ER doctor, a CEO navigating a downturn, a community leader projecting visible control and unwavering confidence is crucial, even if you're feeling uncertain inside.
That visible confidence is key. And we can also learn so much from managing institutional inertia. Look at the Somme again. Why was it such a disaster? Because the military leadership failed catastrophically to adapt their thinking.
They tried to apply cavalry-era tactics to machine-age technology.
Exactly. They just couldn't make the mental leap. And the direct parallel for organizations today, businesses, governments, any large institution, is enormous. Technological change demands a fundamental shift in culture and thinking, not just buying new tools.
You can't run a 21st century tech company using 19th century management structures, right?
You really can't. Failing to adapt leads to organizational disaster, just as it led to slaughter for the infantry at the Somme.
And finally, Keegan gives us powerful insights into decision-making under uncertainty. Commanders, he shows, constantly have to succeed despite having incomplete, often contradictory information, the famous fog of war.
Mm-hmm. And for any decision-maker today, in any field, this means you have to develop frameworks for taking decisive action while accounting for uncertainty and ambiguity. You can't wait for perfect data.
Because in the real world, perfect data is usually a myth. You have to act with what you have.
You do.
So, wrapping this up, for me, reading The Face of Battle again for this deep dive, It really brings about a rehumanization of history. It forces you, the listener, to put aside those abstract arrows on the map and view past conflict through a much more empathetic, much more critical lens.
You start measuring the cost not just in territory gained or lost, but in human suffering, in exhaustion, in terror. It's a powerful, sobering reminder that beneath all the uniforms and the flags, there were just ordinary people caught in extraordinary, horrific circumstances.
And drawing on Keegan's ultimate conclusion, that chilling thought about the trend toward impersonal long-range killing, it just hangs there, doesn't it? The shift to remote warfare raises such critical ethical questions for our modern society.
It really does. When the act of killing is completed on a screen, potentially thousands of miles away, what are the psychological and moral consequences? Not just for the operator, but for society as a whole. Does that distance simplify the act, make it easier, or does it just shift the nature of the trauma, perhaps make it harder to process?
That's the profound and frankly disturbing question Keegan leaves us wrestling with.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecotra Foundation.